started the World Poker Tour. Woo. And today, if any of you are listening to this that play poker, as I tell people when I meet them that they tell me they play poker, and I say, well, you play poker because of me.
Lyle Berman, we're starting.
Okay. I'm very excited to be on.
My first podcast.
Is this your first podcast? This is my first podcast.
That's so exciting. I'm so honored. Maybe you'll do more now.
Maybe.
Well, you have a Wikipedia page. You have a book called I'm All In.
I do, yes.
You have been inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame.
Actually, to clarify, I've been inducted into 5 Hall of Fames.
You are on because I love sharing the stories of entrepreneurs. I find them really fascinating, and a lot of people do, and especially people who have changed the game in whatever field they're in. Okay. And you are a game changer. Just the way that you are one of the most humble people, but one of the most accomplished people. People talk about you with such reverence and like respect. And I'm like, it's no offense. It's just Lyle. It's the Lyle that I've known for years. And you come off so unassuming and so humble that you would never guess that you have such a rich history in so many spaces in the business world. So I want to have you on to share that story and to show people that whatever you think of a traditional entrepreneur, there are so many different types of people, and you can still be very successful and still be extremely humble and generous and just a normal person.
Okay.
So
I hear. Okay.
So now that I've given you that background, why don't you give us some more background on how you got to where you are? Let's take it back to a young Lyle. What did a young Lyle even look like?
Well, I guess my first experience, a young Lyle, I won't go through the baby years, but I had always planned to go to the University of Minnesota. And a friend of mine a year before me had applied to the University of Pennsylvania, the Wharton Business School, which is a very prestigious school. So on a whim, I decided to apply. That was the only college I applied to other than the University of Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
And to my surprise, I was accepted. So I went there for 2 years and 1 quarter. But in my junior year, I was expelled because myself and my 2 roommates were involved in running a poker game in our apartment, which the university frowned upon. So we were expelled, and I think that was good. I tell this story as good news because my life came out pretty good, and had I graduated, I think I would have gone on different paths, and who knows what would have happened. So that was a good thing.
You've got to tell them what you did after that, how Wharton asked you for money.
Oh, I'm sorry. Later on, I was solicited for a donation to the University of Pennsylvania. I sent him a check for 10 cents and explained that I could have afforded more had I graduated from the U. And they did cash the check, but they never responded to me in any way other than just cashing the 10 cent check. I should have saved it.
I love that story. I didn't know if you were going to tell that story. I'm glad we got it right off the bat.
Okay. I have been instrumental in changing a number of things. My first business venture was in the retail apparel business. We had leathers. We started with 1 store and grew it rather dramatically. At one point, we were selling leather, mostly leather apparel, jackets, coats, and we became the largest importer of leather apparel in the United States for quite a while. We grew it. We sold it to W.R. Grayson when we had 27 stores in 1978. We bought it back, and eventually it did go bankrupt after I wasn't on the board anymore. So I wasn't involved in the bankruptcy. But that was my first endeavor. My second game.
That's how you met my dad.
Yes.
Ira Goldfarb,
yes.
Our executive chairman, yeah. Who's, if you watched our second podcast episode, his father was in the leather clothing industry as well.
Right. We sold the business the second time in 1988. In 1990, I got into the Indian gaming casino business, and we were a game changer. Our company was a game changer in two ways. We were a game changer in Indian gaming in that we built very large, big, first-class facilities, actually that would compete if it was on the Strip in Las Vegas. But we also discovered the new gaming law in Mississippi, and we were the first ones. Everybody in Mississippi that started in Indian gaming thought that riverboat gaming meant tying a riverboat to a pier, which is what they did. What we discovered is you can build anything on a barge. And there in Mississippi, the boat didn't have to move. It just had to be tied to a pier. So we built very large barges and built very large casinos and pretty much established Mississippi as a gaming area, a popular gaming resort area. And then, of course, after we did that, everybody Ozark? Else copied us. What?
Is this like Ozark, how they had to build it on a boat?
Yeah, legal? This was like Ozark series on TV,
Ozark.
But there they did a boat.
Yeah.
And you don't need a boat. You can build it on a barge because it doesn't have to move. And the third thing that I did that probably changed the world for a lot of people is myself and some other people, we started the World Poker Tour.
Woo.
And today, if any of you are listening to this that play poker, as I tell people when I meet them that they tell me they play poker, and I say, well, you play poker because of me.
Because you do not tell people that.
The two things really, really made poker explode throughout the world, and that was the World Poker Tour on television and the companies that offered poker. You could play poker on the internet.
What was the poker world like? Because now when I think of poker, I think of the World Poker Tour.
Well, poker has been around for a long, long time. Back in, I think it was my senior year of high school or my freshman year in college, I wrote a paper about how popular poker was. And at that point, it was something like 50 million people played poker in some way as recreational or for money. They did it on the kitchen table. They did it in the country club, whatever. So poker was always popular, but it became obviously much more popular when it was put on television. Back in, I think it was 1985, I received the rights from Jack Binion to put the World Series of Poker on TV. And I went around a little bit to producers and found out that no television show wanted to put on anything on television that had to do with gambling. And that certainly changed by the year, 2002, when we first put World Poker Tour on television.
Was poker televised before?
Each year there was the largest, biggest tournament called World Series of Poker. And they did highlights from that. They didn't put it on like a tournament, more like just highlights of what was going on in the poker world.
Yeah.
But that was the only poker television, other than some in Hollywood. Hollywood put on several movies that revolved around poker. And it was interesting that in almost all of the movies that featured poker didn't do a very good job technically on what hand should be shown and what would be done.
And did people show hole cards?
No. No,
so that was the game-changing thing that you did.
That was the game-changer, that we showed the hole cards so you could see what every player did. When you see the hole cards, you anticipate what people are going to do, and it's much, much more entertaining. I know several people have told me they watched the World Poker Tour the first time for entertainment, and the second time was they'd watch it again to learn.
Yeah, so for people who don't play poker, I think you can still learn from this because it's just incredible how much you've truly revolutionized the field. And I've seen that people have learned a lot just from watching. Not only did you start televised poker, essentially, you start televised poker and being able to see every player's cards, which you can't, if you play poker, you can't show your cards. But with the World Poker Tour, you could watch on TV each player's cards. And so you got to learn from, the best players in the world,
That's
essentially.
Correct. Yes.
How long did it take for that to truly take off? Was it immediate or was it a progression?
Poker took off immediately when we started the World Poker Tour. The World Poker Tour, the first three episodes that we ran on television were sponsored by poker sites, internet poker sites where you could go play. And in all three cases, their computers broke when we were running the show because so many people learned about it that they could go online and play and logged in. And in those days, their systems weren't set up to handle the influx of tens of thousands of people at one time. Yeah, and to this day, it's interesting, when Steve Lipscomb and myself started it, I don't think either one of us envisioned that it would be still on television 22 years later.
When was your first foray into the poker world?
We started playing poker when we were 13, 14 years old. After a club meeting or on Sunday afternoons, we would go down in somebody's basement and play. And then when I went to college, I played a lot of poker during my college years. I quit playing when I graduated from the U of M. I joined my father's business. I was very involved in business. I quit playing. And then one day, about 1981 or so, I'd read a book written by a famous poker player, Doyle Brunson. The book says, How I Made $1 Million Playing Poker. I read it. I happened to be in Vegas during a trip, and I went and entered a small poker tournament that cost $100. And I actually, at one point, beat on one hand the current reigning champion of the World Series of Poker. But wow. I didn't win or anything, but I enjoyed it. And then I started going to Las Vegas and playing poker. And that's how I got started.
From a young age, did you know that you were good, like exceptionally good?
No, I think as a young age, I think I felt more that I enjoyed it. But of course, I was a winning player. And in college, I know it did supplement my allowance that my parents had given me to partake.
And when did you find your love of business? Was that something that you knew from a young age?
Yes. I'd always thought of myself as going into business when I was very much younger. Myself and my two sisters ran a lemonade stand. And it was interesting. My mother made us pay for the ingredients that we put in the lemonade because she wanted us to understand that it wasn't just the product was free. We'd go up to the bus station, like we sold it for a nickel or a dime. This would have been back in the very early 50s. So I started there. I also, with a friend of mine, we did a route operation where we cut grass and took care of lawns in the summertime. And in the winter, we shoveled snow from Minneapolis. So I think from a very young age, I always planned to be in business. I know my relatives tell me, I always told them when I was really young that I was going to become a millionaire. I didn't know how I was going to do that, but that was something at least I said.
I can imagine.
And it came true.
Remember that humility I was talking about? It comes and goes. What was your family background growing up? Were you guys middle class?
We were very much middle class, Jewish, but not orthodox in any way, conservative Jewish family, went to public schools.
Did you get along with people in school? Were you bullied? Were you well-liked?
No, I wasn't in the in crowd, and I wasn't with the bad crowd. I was kind of middle of the road. I got along pretty good, got very good grades. Matter of fact, I was a straight-A student in junior high and senior high. When I went to college at Wharton at a very higher gene pool, I was a C student. So learned very quickly that in the land that depends on where you are, but very much a C student in college.
Were you studious?
In high school, I was very studious. In college, not so much.
What were you doing?
Playing poker and going to racetracks.
I mean, those were extracurricular activities that were preparing you for your career path.
That could be. That could be. but I studied too. I mean,
you didn't fail. You grew up middle class. As you've gained success, when do you remember first being like, oh my God, I've made it? Total economic freedom. What were those thoughts?
I think Economic freedom occurred in the first time we sold our retail store chain. We had 27 stores, and one day, Mr. Grace from W.R. Grace Company walked into my office with a couple of his friends, came in and said, you know, we'd like to buy your business and make you a rich man. But I explained to him, I'm already rich, just not liquid. But we eventually sold to W.R. Grace. So that's when I first felt I had economic security. And then when we sold the business the second time in 1988, where I received a substantial amount of money, and that's when I felt that myself and my grandchildren, my children, would be economically secure as well.
What was that like?
It felt good. it felt very good, satisfying. I was planning to semi-retire or to retire. My goal was to do nothing until I got bored to see maybe I wouldn't get bored. I didn't know. It was the July 4th in 1988 or 89. Some friends, some acquaintances of mine came to me to help finance an Indian gaming casino, and that's how I got into the casino business. So I never expected to be in the casino business, never even thought about it.
When did you finally retire? Or semi-retire?
Hasn't happened yet.
I know. You're still going.
Still going. It's in 1990. We had four employees, just at corporate headquarters. And by 1996, we had 20,000 people working for our company called Grand Casinos. Mm-hmm. So we really did explosive growth. But I'm not active today in any business as a day-to-day operator, but I am on about 9 or 10 different board of directors. So I do keep rather busy. Lots of phone calls. Lots of helping decision-making. So I guess they'd call me semi-retired.
And you're not bored?
I'm definitely not bored.
What has success looked like for you over the years? Like your idea of success, did that evolve for you over time? What's the difference between when you were 20 versus when you were now?
I think I've always felt successful. It's very interesting, other than when I was left college. But, you know, business is two parts. Lucky to be in the right place at the right time, mm-hmm. but then execution. I was lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time. For example, we entered the leather apparel business at the beginning of the hippie craze, and they all wore leather fringe jackets, fringe vests, but we executed well as well.
What are some other keys to success for young 20-year-olds starting out their careers? What advice would you give them?
I guess my first advice to be is accept a position that you think you'll enjoy. It's important, obviously, to work and make a living, support your family, but it's also important to enjoy what you do. So I would say that one of the keys to my success was I enjoyed it every day. When I got up in the morning, I couldn't wait to get to work. I don't know which was more important, having a cup of coffee but I think enjoying what you do is very important to be successful. And then, of course, to apply yourself, that, you know, take a position where you can make a difference. So those would be my keys.
What do you feel like you best brought to the table in each of your businesses? Was it strategy? What was your cup of tea?
Well, I think it was strategy and organization, getting the right people in place and giving good direction.
Yeah.
What we did, you know, learning the business from the ground up and then applying myself was probably one of my keys to success.
Do you like learning new things?
Yes, I like learning through things.
Have you learned the guitar?
No, I've always wanted to learn to play the guitar.
You got a guitar.
3 years ago, I bought a guitar. I bought 3 or 4 books on how to play a guitar, plus a video on how to learn to play a guitar.
You bought a video?
I haven't watched the video or read the book, so.
What do you feel that poker has helped you with in business? Are there skills as a poker player?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between poker and business. In poker, the time you make a decision and the time you find out whether it was a good or bad one can be 30 seconds or less. In business, many times you make a decision and you won't even learn whether it's good or bad for up to 2 years. Yeah. So I think it reinforces that you have to think through your decisions, but it does reinforce that decisions make a difference. I think that's one of the keys.
Are you this exact way when you play? Like calm?
Yes, I'm always very calm.
I've never seen you get upset, raise your voice. Yeah, when you win a big hand,
yes.
Do you get excited or are you just like, okay?
I go just okay, but internally I feel very happy.
So with the success that you've had, have there been sacrifices that you've had to make for success? Has it all been rainbows?
I guess my two ex-wives would tell you that the sacrifices I made was maybe not being the greatest father and husband. I was very focused on business. I didn't probably give as much attention to my wives that I should have. I would say that was one of my casualties. But I'm still very close with my four children today. Work consumed me. I worked weekends a lot. But yeah. I would say once I was separated on the weekends when I got my children, we would come to my house. And it was called, I lived in a rather large house on a lake and it was called Camp Berman. And many of my friends, be it single or not, with their kids would come and spend the afternoon at Camp Berman.
What have been your biggest accomplishments to you? I think other people can regard your accomplishments, but like you personally, what have you felt like? That's something I'll carry with me forever.
Two big ones would be creating the World Poker Tour because it's affected people around the world. And the other was the creation of the gaming industry in Mississippi. So I would say those would be the two biggest accomplishments.
And the Rainforest Cafe.
Well, we didn't mention that. I was involved.
That's my favorite.
Oh, well, we started the Rainforest Cafe with myself and a couple investors.
Yeah.
I like to say the thing about Rainforest Cafe is I created with two businesses worldwide brands. One was Rainforest Cafe, which became worldwide, and the other was World Poker Tour. Yeah. But with Rainforest Cafe, we made one fundamental mistake. We built, because of our early success, we kept building bigger and bigger restaurants in malls. And after the first year, almost every single restaurant in a mall went down, decreased business. So we had these really large, we started with 10,000 square feet and got up to 25,000 square feet. And we couldn't support the overhead and eventually sold it very cheap. But today it still exists as a great brand around the world.
My family thinks this is a crazy overlap in our lives because growing up, my sister, mom, and I, Rainforest Cafe was like our special place to visit. If you've never been to Rainforest Cafe, it's probably like as a child, you would love it more. But they have all these like, it's like you're in a rainforest and they have these animals.
Animatronics.
Yeah. And then there's like at one period during dinner, they'll like flash the lights and then they'll play all the animal sounds. So it feels like you're in a rainforest. And my sister and I would beg our mom to go to Rainforest Cafe on special events so that we could have the rainforest moment. And it's something that I haven't been there in like 15 years maybe, but I still remember that. And to know that you started it. Yeah, when
and
you put it that way.
And we wouldn't be able to go yum yum.
Whenever Lyle likes something, he goes yum yum.
Yeah, that's true.
When he apologizes, which is rarely, he says, I'm sorry.
Oh, whenever I win a big poker hand, I say to the
no, guy. No, you don't.
I do. No. I'm known for that. I win a big poker and I go, I'm sorry. And the other thing that I've done.
Someone who just loses
this
millions.
This is an interesting byproduct. I've introduced to the world of poker the term cockroach. I call people cockroaches. And of course, there's one incident. If anybody ever calls you a cockroach, there's only two possible responses. One is, call me Mr. Cockroach. And the other one is, when the bombs come, cockroaches will still be around. Also, in poker, my mind sometimes drifts. I tell people I'm 80 years old. I tell them when they're my age, they'll be drooling. But in any event, my mind sometimes goes, so I'm slow to act when I'm not in a hand. And it's when it's your turn to act, they'll always say, Lyle, which means look at your hand and do something.
That's hilarious. I wish you brought your book, your little book.
It's called Wits and Wisdom. And it's a whole bunch of very interesting sayings, some of which I created, but most of which I've just copied, why do you go out on a limb? That's because where the fruit is. Well, one's called life is a veal chop, but people don't understand. Nobody understands that. I created that one. And that was, there was a restaurant in New York City And whenever I went there with people, we went often, I often demanded somebody order the veal chop. Why? Because the presentation on the plate was just so wonderful. It kind of like made you happy just to see it.
Yeah.
And then what I say in life is a veal chop, to constantly look for the little things that make you happy.
Did you ever buy anything crazy? Like a sports car when you got your first big... You are just so not that kind of guy.
Well, yes, I do buy crazy things. And
you buy crazy things, but not like when people think a successful businessman, they think he's going to have, you know, I don't know, a crazy sports car. And
well, but I collect whatever. Minerals. I collect opals.
But this is Lyle's version of that. He has, I want to show pictures. He has like... these big, what are they called?
Petrified wood.
He has these jars.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
200
I collect Red Wing pottery, minerals of all kinds.
Minerals. Yeah. When did you get into that? Is that something you've always liked?
Because of rainforest.
Yeah.
Well, you're kind of both. But in 1995, when we started Rainforest, we went to the big mineral gem show once a year in Tucson, Arizona. It's called the International Gem Mineral Gem Show.
It's okay.
They sell everything there from sand to diamonds and all kinds of minerals. And it's from all over the world, both buyers and sellers. We went there because we thought there's some things that we could buy that we could sell in the rainforest store.
Mm-hmm.
Because every rainforest restaurant had a fairly large retail store. Turns out everything we bought didn't sell. But we started going there. I've been going there every year since.
You got my parents into it. We have three of his old ones here.
Four.
And he walked in and said, my rejects.
Yeah, well, I sold them to Ira because I ran out of space.
Lyle also doesn't believe in expiration dates, which is a fun fact.
On food.
I would argue that's a critical expiration date, something you consume. You have jars of rice that span back like 20
years. Oh, right. Well, rice keeps forever. If you found rice in the pyramids, it would still be there. But I believe in taste more than dates. So if it says, I've had things in my refrigerator 10 years
but you
old.
You can have both. All right. I think that concludes. Let me grab the smoothies. We'll do our toast and we will wrap it up.
Oh, I can use a smoothie. My throat's a little raspy.
So, Lyle, I've enjoyed learning more about you.
Okay.
I've learned new things that I never knew about you after many years. So it's such a pleasure. It's crazy how humble you are after learning more about your story and all of your successes. And I think it really speaks volumes to who you are and how you've been able to come about your success. So thank you for sharing your story with us. Even though you've done so much, the greatest successes to me are your sweet potato. He always makes the best sweet potatoes. The banana bread, but you don't make the banana bread.
I don't make it, but I have some here you can try.
For me?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. And your wild rice that may or may not be 20 years expired, but it's still good. So you have a lot of sides to you, and I love learning about all of them. So with that, I'll let you give your parting words to our listeners and viewers on how they can sow goodness in their lives, in their businesses, in their communities. What do you have?
Well, a good philosophy in life is there's no one thing in life that you strive for that'll make you happy, be it money, be it success, becoming the president of the United States. One thing will never make you happy. The key to happiness in life is all the small things on a day-to-day basis. Enjoy the shower. Enjoy kissing your wife goodbye. Seeing your kids. That's kind of the key to life. Find happiness in your day-to-day living.
Cheers to that. L'chaim. Okay. Thank you so much, Lyle.
No, what's chai? The chai
that's when you know you have a chew.
No, but the
chai.
Chai is a, oh, that's a.
Not chai. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Try it.
Try the chai.
Try it.
We've got a board meeting to get to.